No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. Tonight, we have some very special guests. First, let me say hello to my co-host, Maria. How are you, Maria? Everything going well?
You know, I was this week in Northern California because there was a conference called the Augmented World Expo in its ninth year, and it was a school function because of the media psychology angle with my PhD studies. It was about artificial reality, virtual reality, mixed reality, and now they're calling it XM for immersive reality. And it was way out there, Michael, and yet the technology is here today. And I got to wear the goggles and got to do things. And they even wear an eye tracking goggle where you look at things and that's where it goes, and the cameras. And I mean, it's almost too difficult to explain, but I just flew back today, this afternoon, so I'm pretty exhausted.
Well, thanks for being on again, as always, and helping me, because I can't do this alone, and you're so great, and you've already lost me in your explanation, but let's make sure we talk about some of that during the show. But first, let's bring on Matt and Jacob Clark. These are two young men that I met the other day in Washington, and they have a project to get young people involved in politics, to get them out to vote. And, you know, that's so important. I know that you feel the same way about this, Maria, that young people just don't get involved enough. So let's get them on and talk to them for a while and see what they have to say, because their project is so interesting. And they interviewed me, and I was just so impressed by them. I asked them to come on the show. Matt, Jacob, are you there? Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Tell us a little. Let's start out by telling us a little bit exactly what your project is and what you hope to do with this.
Well, we came up with this idea actually a few weeks ago. And the gist of it is, the main thing we want to do is we kind of want to engage the younger voters more. And we noticed that over the years throughout, you know, as long as I've been able to vote and as long as Matt's been able to vote, D.C. politics has kind of been going like kind of the same way. So a candidate puts their name on a ballot, they kind of have little to no competition, and the voting turnout is so low, they're kind of guaranteed a spot in whatever, you know, position they're running for. So we kind of want to change that by kind of getting the younger voters more involved. So not only do they know who they're voting for, but they know why it's important and understand that, hey, if we don't vote, some of the same things that we protest and we talk about, we complain about, they will never change if we don't do our part to try to change, you know, legislation and law by putting in people that agree or feel the same way that we feel on certain issues.
Well, that's so important. And, you know, just one example from D.C. that we've seen lately is that we have a young a member of the D.C. Council named Trayon White from Ward 8, and he actually, I think, was put into office by the vote of young people. I know that, I mean, I don't know what the statistics are for him, But I certainly know that I know him, and I was out. I spent a lot of time in Ward 8, and I know that he had a lot of young people out there working for him and pushing for him. So that's just one example that of what young people can do if they get involved. And it's so important for them to get involved.
Well, yeah, Senator Brown, I absolutely agree with that. And I think it's thank you. I think it speaks to the fact that young people will get involved and they have the energy to be involved if there's something that provides relevance to the political process. You got to remember, a lot of our young African-American teens, you know, who are born and raised in this city feel disenfranchised right now. They live a disenfranchised life. They work in a lot of the places that people generally frequent to enjoy, the restaurants, the bars. They're not going there as patrons. They're in there as employees. They live and they see and they interact with the different side of the district. And I think that they often feel like their voice doesn't matter or their vote doesn't count, and they tend to get, you know, separated from the process. And I think when you see a gentleman such as Trayon kind of step out there and, you know, get the support of the young people, it shows that, you know, when we have somebody we can latch on to, we have somebody who, you know, we feel like represents us, you know, then we will be involved, we'll be engaged. But we need to know that, you know, our population needs to know that you can't just turn it on, turn it off. You have to be fully committed to the process, because ultimately we shape how the city ends up. And like you said, Senator Brown, so eloquently during our interview, you know, if we don't participate, the voters who vote will be represented. You know, we won't have a voice unless we participate. So it's our aim with Vote Local DC to really put all candidates out there, make everybody who's willing to give us their ear, you know, relevant to the population that needs to get out and vote.
So may I ask, was there something that galvanized you to take this action? Or was it an accumulation over time and you just decided, that's enough, we got to do something?
Well, I believe it was kind of a combination of both. So we've been in the city all our lives with Native Washingtonians, and my first time voting was when President Obama first ran, the first time, I believe, 2008. And I saw a lot of people, it was my first time voting, but I saw a lot of people at the polls in my community that, you know, after talking to them, they had never voted before. And their only motivation was, you know, this might be a change. It might, you know, the process might actually work. But a lot of people saw that and they voted for President Obama. But a lot of people, you know, skipped over the local part of the politics. So local officers, council members, mayor, we kind of glanced over that part. And that's a big thing about change in the city that we think we need to change in order to create the change that we need, is to get more involved in the local side. So cumulatively over time, we have noticed how there's been a lack of interest in the local politics. And I think most of it is because a lot of people, they're initially turned off when you hear talk about politics. They say, well, I don't vote, I don't want to get into it. But we saw that time in the polls when President Obama went to run for election in 2008, that we have the capability to come out. And we can't just come out when, you know, we feel like things are in our favor. We have to come out in order to make a difference and make a change. And it's funny because right before we came up with this idea, one of the candidates walked up to us in our neighborhood and, you know, started talking to us. And it kind of gave us an idea like, hey, you know, we should really reach out to the candidates, because we heard a lot of things that we never knew. And so we thought, hey, it'd probably be a good idea to, like, reach out to the candidates for not just the council members, but for everything, so that the people can hear what they have to say. Because I heard some things I never heard before. And I think that's important when it comes to making decisions about who's going to be involved in running your city. You should really know where they stand and, you know, what they're pushing forward as far as, you know, for the city coming up in the future. So that was kind of what sparked us to, you know, go move forward with the Vote Local DC campaign.
I have to say, I didn't learn that lesson until much later in my political career, that what happens locally matters more than what happens nationally. And that even includes Board of Education and water boards and, as you mentioned, city council and mayor and stuff. And so you've got decades on me with your wisdom in that regard.
Well, and let me also say that it's very true that we see an explosion in the amount of people that vote of all ages when you have a presidential election, for example, than when you have a local election. And as you guys know, well know, because you're Washingtonians, we really don't have a big voice at the national level. Local politics is even more important in Washington than it is in most places. Because,
excellent point.
Yeah, because we have that. And let me ask you guys a question. Do you think there's a difference between my generation and your generation? Because we were politically active because we were galvanized around the Vietnam War. Do you guys need some big issue to galvanize you? And are there issues out there like Black Lives Matter and gun control and jobs and, you know, some of the big issues that young people care about? Is there one big issue that you guys think can galvanize young voters like the Vietnam War galvanized us?
You know, Senator Brown, take a, I guess Senator Brown, there are plenty of issues out there which we could be galvanized around, but I think it's the fact that, like, you know, we are the future. I think the future is really what needs to galvanize us, because right now you look at the state of the country, you know, you can agree with our current leadership or you can disagree with it. But the fact is, I think everybody across the country is looking for a change. And if we don't find a way to unite instead of, you know, being divided and really understand how we can make an impact and take real basic and engageable actions to make our country a better place, then I don't see anything, any other issue that trumps that. You know, there are things that come. We have issues that come and go that kind of raise the public, that kind of get raised in a public spectacle. But I don't believe that there's any one issue out there that trumps, you know, just us being responsible citizens moving forward into the future, making sure that America is good for the next generation and great for the generation after that. You know, we really have to start taking a forward look at where we're at as a country and what we want it to be. You know, there's a lot of complaining that happens with our generation, but there's not a lot of action to go along with that. So I think we just need to be galvanized around the fact that we are the future, you know, and the future starts now. We have to plan for it. We have to be involved in it. We have to be engaged in our local process, you know, or else it'll just pass us by.
So what is your organization and what's the contact information and what's your goal aside from getting more younger people involved?
So our organization, for Vote Local DC, is Vote Local DC, at Vote Local DC on all social media, Instagram, working on the website. We're also on Twitter. Our short-term goal is to conversate with those people running for office in the upcoming primaries and to keep these conversations going. Long-term goal, we want to create a platform where, you know, not just the political people of the city, but the people with influence in the city can come on and talk to the younger generation of millennials about what's important. What do we need to know so we can kind of stay informed? You know, it's a lot of things going on. And nowadays, the way social media is, everybody gets the information through Twitter. And a lot of times when you hear things through Twitter, it's distorted. And we're not always getting accurate information. So we want to be able to provide a platform where we can get the information directly from the source. So even after the elections are over, we want to be able to, you know, have people who, you know, whether it's senators or council members or the mayor or, you know, whoever, to come and talk to us so like they can let us know what's going on and we can relay it back to the people. Because we feel like that bridge needs to be connected. You know, the older generation, I feel like they understand how important that process is. Our generation, most millennials, it's kind of like a rebellious state, you know, where there's a lack of faith in it, and understandably so, but I feel like we still need to know that in order to make change, you know, we have to work within the framework that we're given. And so that's why we think it's important to, you know, even after the elections, to continue these conversations going so that the people stay informed, not just, you know, the older generation, but the younger generation as well. And the younger ones coming up underneath, because, you know, they got high school kids and teenagers who take interest in the political process early on too. So we want to make sure the information is being passed down, not anything misconstrued. We don't have any hidden agenda. We just want the people who make the decisions to be able to talk to the people about what's going on and to listen to the people about
what they need.
Well, let me give you the good news and the bad news. The good news is that 18 to 35-year-olds, or the group that we're talking about, millennials, have just become the largest voting bloc in America. They've just outpaced the baby boomers.
Really? How is that possible?
Well, because unfortunately, Maria, some of us are dying off. And so the age group above 71, which is part of the baby boomer generation, is now smaller and proportionately to the millennials. But the bad news is that they're the lowest voting turnout. I know that Matt and Jacob know this because this is why they're doing what they do, but they're the lowest in voter turnout, millennials. And it's amazing because in only five states in the last election did millennials vote more for Donald Trump than for Hillary Clinton. So if it had been up to just the millennial vote, Clinton would have had 504 electoral votes and Trump would have had 23. So that just goes to show you how much of an impact they really could have if they had come out in full force. Only Idaho, Wyoming, North Dakota, Kentucky, and West Virginia did millennials vote more for the president than they voted for the Democratic candidate. So they really could have changed everything. So what do you guys think of that?
Well, I think you're right. That is one of the reasons why we're doing this Vote Local DC campaign. But it also goes a lot to what you said earlier about the Vietnam War being something that pushed the older generation to vote. I think a lot of our generation, they're just now seeing a reason to get involved in the politics. Now, you know, President Obama served two terms and then President Trump was elected. A lot of people weren't particularly, you know, happy with that, you know, outcome. But I feel like his campaign, his presidency to this point is that tipping point for some millennials. But I feel like for the rest of those that are out, we have to just keep pushing the message. I mean, we have to keep, you know, trying to engage them and keep bringing the politics and the candidates and the people to them that they need to talk to so they can understand why it's important. I don't believe you need to hit your head or you need to touch the fire to know that it's hot. I feel like we need to, you know, look at our history and past experience and understand that this is something that we need to get involved in. We need to encourage the younger youth to get involved and our children. Because if we don't get involved in this political process, quite frankly, we'll be left out. And African Americans and other minorities as well, we don't have the luxury of, you know, being able to skip over this process. So I think it's important that we just really keep pressing the issue and we find different and creative ways to kind of introduce politics to people. Because it's something you hear a lot of people say, I'm not into politics, but that's the way of the world. You got to understand policy. You got to understand how things move. So you may not be into them, but you got to learn. You got to get into them to be able to survive and to keep moving. So I think the way to change that is just to keep pushing our message and to keep finding new and creative ways to introduce politics to people, because until we get majority or everybody in, the difference won't be, we really won't know what difference we can make until we get as many people involved as we can.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
What has been the reaction from your peers to what you're attempting to do? Are they interested or they could be bothered? They say, I don't care.
So it's twofold. We have some people that are really excited. We have some people that are really excited about it. But with most people in our generation, you know, it has to be catchy. There has to be a reason to, you know, to kind of latch on to it. So we're in the early stages right now. So it's a little bit of both. It's a little, you know, people who just, okay, we see what you're doing. And then there's some people that say, okay, well, this would be great. So right now, we're just really just, you know, kind of see how we can get, you know, our audience. We can reach out more to more people.
Well, you know, I think what you say about older people is so true, too. I hope that people out there listening understand this, you know, that my grandmother always voted. She always, I mean, she was 83 years old and she would go out to vote because if my grandmother were alive today, she'd be like 125. But it's true. And she didn't have the right to vote when she was young. Women didn't have the right to vote. My grandmother was born in the late 1800s, and women didn't get the right to vote until the early 1900s. So she didn't have the right to vote. And as soon as she got the right, she did it every time. And she let us know that she didn't really feel that voting was as much a right as it was an obligation.
And a privilege, I think.
And a privilege, yes, absolutely. But, you know, this is one thing that we discussed when we first met, is that when you don't vote, you really do a disservice to everybody that's like you. So we cut funding for education before we cut funding for Social Security, because we know as politicians that old people vote and young people don't. So no matter who you vote for, even if you go out and you write in your own name for office, although it's important to do what you guys are doing, educate people, but no matter who you vote for, just the mere act of voting helps everybody else that's like you, everybody that's in your income bracket, everybody that's your race, everybody that's your sex and your age and your position in life, because politicians look very closely at those statistics and they know who votes and they know who doesn't. And, you know, and there's that old saying, right, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So just the mere act of voting and what you guys are doing, I can't tell you how much I not only respect what you do, I think it's just holds a lot of hope for the future for young people. But let me ask you a question. What do you think? There's legislation that's been considered. I don't know if it's still active. It was brought up by a council member last year to allow 16-year-olds to vote. What do you think of that legislation? You think we should include 16-year-olds?
So I think in today's digitally informed world and the technology that we have today, I think it raises an interesting question, right? Because 16-year-olds nowadays, teenagers nowadays, have access to far more information, you know, including outlets like Mines and Jacobs for Vote Local D.C. So, you know, is there a way to ensure that they're getting good and balanced information so that they're informed enough to go to the polls and, you know, be able to make an informed decision? You know, I feel like that's more of an audit on our part of society, too. But I don't have a problem with, you know, getting the younger part of the population out to vote. Because, again, when you think about the future, when you project 20, 30 years down the road, and that's the world that these kids have to live in, you know, maybe they should be allowed to participate if they have enough information, if they have enough understanding of the world. So, you know, I don't see it as a bad thing, honestly.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I think it's something that needs to be explored. I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest with you, only because I've owned a couple of 16-year-olds in my life. Maria has too, right?
Yes.
Right. And you know, and we've stood there and we've said, take out the garbage 132 times, only to have them forget to take out the garbage. So it's kind of a mixed bag for us. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a matter of determining whether we think they can make an informed decision at that age or not. And that's a whole new perspective right there, because in the past we've really seen it much more, as Maria said, as a privilege. So 18-year-olds got the vote because we went to Vietnam. And we stood up and we said, look, if we're old enough to die for democracy, we should be old enough to participate in it. And people said, yes, that's right. If you're old enough to put your life on the line to defend our freedom, then you ought to be old enough to have a say, you know, to have a stake in the game. Right. So this is kind of new frontier that we're going into. But I think you're right. That's the big question, is whether they can make informed decisions or not. So guys, tell us, what do you want to say that we're not asking you? What thing do you want to get out there? Because we're going to move on and talk about some of the stuff that Maria was doing. But we certainly want to hear everything from you. And you know what? As we move forward, our show's been on the air for more than 3 years. As we move forward, we're going to want you guys to come back and give us updates on how you're doing. But tell us, what is it that you want to say to the 8,000 people that listen to our show every week? What's the message you want to get out there?
Well, definitely support Vote Local DC. Make sure you follow us on all social media at Vote Local DC. But also, you know, reach out to us and let us know if you know any young people or anywhere we can come out to and we can speak or we can bring our platform to. Just let us know, because we really just want to bring awareness, because as native Washingtonians, we're seeing what's happening to the city as far as gentrification, and we don't really feel like we have time to feel sorry for ourselves. And Senator Brown, you said something earlier, as well as when we first met, interview about it's our duty, it's our responsibility to vote. It's our responsibility, coming from the communities that we come from, to stand up and, you know, try to find better ways to make our communities better, to try to find better avenues to bring resources to our community that we don't have. So we, you know, we come from an era in the city where it was rocky. Some things were going on. Things, you know, the improvement process was slow. Gentrification happened. A lot of people were pushed out. You know, a lot of people are going through things, stress, losing houses, having to move schools, losing jobs. But we want to be able to bring, so people, there's a way to change some of this. So our big thing is just, you know, we want to get more involved. We want to, you know, get more connected. We want to reach out to the people who have access to power and that can make decisions. And we want to bring them the story of the citizens that are struggling in the city. And we want to connect those two. We want to just make sure that we do our job as far as, you know, standing on our 2 feet and, you know, helping out our community and, you know, helping out our city and doing our part. Because as Native Washingtonians, we feel like we have a responsibility. And our responsibility is to the people that we grew up with, the people that helped raise us, the people who gave us jobs, you know, the people that we've met throughout the years. So we really just want people, you know, to help us get our message out there so that we can reach as many people as we can. And not just, you know, in D.C., but, you know, all over. Vote local. It's important. D.C., you know, we're from here. We love the city, but we're not the only city going through a change that's leaving some people outside in the cold. So we just want our message to get out there, and we want people to understand that we're not here to create any type of bias or agenda. We really just want to be that bridge the gap. Because, you know, if we fast forward a few years, you know, when you get old, you die. That's how life works. And, you know, as people get older and people die, they'll need somebody to pass the torch, to pass the mantle to, and we need to be prepared. So we really just want to get our message out there and, you know, however we can, connect with those that we need to connect to.
And what will you be doing on Tuesday, Election Day?
So on Tuesday, we'll be, we'll roll out our interviews this week and next week. To kind of get people, we'll be doing a segment called Straight to the Streets, where we'll hit the streets of D.C. and we'll ask people questions about, you know, what do they feel about the voting process, what issues are important, are they familiar with the candidates, questions of that nature. On Tuesday, we're trying to be as involved as we can, moving around the city, trying to, you know, talk to the people to see about what's going on, the climate, and some of the candidates. So we'll be around, we'll be doing a lot of moving around.
Well, let me just say that I've met these two young men personally, and I got to tell you, you give me great hope for the future, because obviously you're not only engaged, but you have such a great sense of of what needs to be done. And, you know, we hear a lot of bad things about young people in the media. And you talked about Iraqi, you know, living in a neighborhood where there were problems. And we hear these problems all the time. But, you know, I want everybody out there to understand that there's great people out there like Matt and Jacob Clark who care and who are working to make a better future. And I think that, you give me great hope that things will continue to improve and that people will continue to be engaged. So I hope you come back. Maybe I'll run into you out there on the street. Thanks, gentlemen, for being with us. And we hope to talk to you again real soon.
Yes, very inspirational.
Thank you, Maria. Success. Maria, we thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Really wonderful.
Thanks, guys.
How fabulous.
Yeah. And you
can
know,
you say girl, how it is that you met them?
They came and they interviewed me. They called me, you know, because I'm a candidate. And they called me and they said, we'd like to interview you. And I said, well, you know, I'd love to interview you guys, but, and this is the thing that I really respect about him. I said, I'd like to do an interview with this guy, you guys, but I'm in the middle of a campaign, you know, and I'm going crazy and there's all this stuff. And they said, you tell us where you are and we'll be there.
Oh.
And I said, okay. I said, there's a forum tonight and I'll be at the forum. You want to, and they said, where is it? And I told them and I said, and you know, and I'm speaking between 7 and 7:30 and they said, we'll be there. And, you know, sure enough, as soon as I finished, I walked out the door. There they were. They had a camera. They were already set up. They, you know, they had great questions. They had emailed me the questions in advance, but I never saw them because I was so busy, you know, I was on my way to the thing. But they, you know, and I said to myself, oh, my God, look at these young guys. You know, they're engaged. They're informed. They're, you know, they're willing to be flexible and get the job done. And that's what I mean when I said to them that they give me great hope for the future. I'm not just blowing sunshine up their skirt. I think that, you know, these guys are right on top of it. And they know exactly what they're doing. And I think that's absolutely fabulous. And I think they will have an impact. And you know what? I bet I'm willing to make a bet with you right now, Maria Sanchez, that in a couple of years, we'll have one of them back on the show and they'll be a candidate.
I wouldn't doubt that. I mean, it's so exciting for me to see young people get I mean, I think I've told you this, Michael, that when I turned 18, I registered and I've voted ever since. It's always been important to me. And I don't recall thinking that I was in the minority back in the day in college and stuff, but it sure seems like it is so now that it's always about the Gray Panthers and the senior citizens who are active and who vote. And thus, as you mentioned, legislation goes their way or accommodations or budgets or what have you. And you're right. If there's more skin in the game, it would make things much more interesting, don't you think?
Oh, my God. And yeah, you know, one thing that these guys kept saying, which is so true, and we say it all the time, you know, I used to train candidates to run for public office, and we train Native Americans because Native Americans don't participate as much as they should in the political process, local political process, exactly what these guys are talking about, because they have their own local governments. So they involve themselves in tribal elections and tribal governments, but then they end up getting, you know, they really have a stake in the larger local government in things like you said, like school board and water board and mm-hmm. all those kind of things. And they tend not to get involved in it. And we always say to them, look, if you're not at the table, you don't get fed. And it's funny, you know, we say that all the time. And then I was at a thing one day where somebody stood up and said, the truth of the matter is, if you're not at the table, a lot of times you're on the menu. And that's absolutely true, you know. So these guys are absolutely right. You got to be at the table. And just in case you guys aren't doing the math, Maria registered when she was 18. That means she's been voting for at least 10 years now. So let's move on and talk about what you were doing. And we'll have Matt and Jacob. They've just started this project. As they said, they just started a few weeks ago. The one question I should have asked them is how many candidates have responded to them. But I hope a lot of candidates have. And
I would hope so, too.
Yeah, and we'll have them back to find out. And maybe we'll have maybe after the election we can hear some of their street interviews and what people had to say. That would be very interesting, I think.
Very, very.
So tell me what you're doing, because I got to tell you, I'm so intrigued at what, oh my God, I'm getting so old, I can't remember his name, the brilliant man who just passed. Stephen Hawking said about the big danger in the future being artificial intelligence. So tell me, what are you learning out there?
Okay, so artificial intelligence wasn't a part of this, but it is a part of my program because it is media. And media, a lot of people think of media just as, say, radio and television, but it's everything from print, as in newspapers, magazines, to PowerPoints, to TED Talks, to social media. It's basically any communication device. And then, so artificial intelligence, the one thing that is, and the reason Hawking said something about that, and Elon Musk also said we should be very, very afraid, whereas Zuckerberg says not really. What I've been learning is we should be very, very afraid. And the reason is not because they're going to take over the world, but because there aren't any ethics in place. So we don't have an overarching understanding of what is and isn't okay with the programming of artificial intelligence. Thus, if there's bad guys out there doing it, then they're going to be able to destroy things or people or what have you. And it's my fear, Michael, is that until some cataclysmic event occurs and we go, oh my goodness, what were we thinking? That is when this ethical consideration will be put in place. Now, the EU just did Friday, May 25th, the GDPR, which is their consensus about data and the ethics involved and whether it's shared and how it's shared and all that stuff, which that Cambridge Analytica thing came down with Facebook because there wasn't something like this in place.
Right.
But the United States doesn't have anything like that or anything close to adopting like that. So we are still very much in the wild, wild west of our media and the use thereof.
Well, and that's scary, isn't it?
It's terribly scary.
Because imagine, you know, you look at what happened to the world, and we always act like this is ancient history, but it really is not. It was 60 years ago that the world almost fell apart, 60, 70 years ago over fascism. And imagine what those guys, imagine what Mussolini and Hitler and those guys would have done if they had had mass media that we have today. You know, now we connect people, we can connect people instantly all over the world. It really does come down to who controls it, right? To
yes.
Whether it's good, whether we do that for the good or whether we do it for some other purpose, you know?
An example I can give you of AI is the driverless cars. So that has been programmed to do certain things, right? And one of them is to avoid accidents. That's why they say we need it, which I hope to goodness we're not required, because I'm not a fan of the driverless cars. And so it could be programmed to determine in a split second whose life is more valuable, and that's who they won't hit. And if you're riding in the car and it's determined that your life is less valuable than the person in the side, the pedestrian crossing zone, or if you swerve to go away from that person and you jump the curb and you hit somebody on the sidewalk, that program can be made as to ascertain whose life has more value, and you very well may be the one that perishes because of that. I'm not saying that that is in place now, but that capability exists.
Well, first, let me tell you, you're not in favor of driverless cars because you don't have to deal with Virginia drivers. those of us in D.C. that, of course, we would only require that for people in Virginia. We don't want it in the district. But no, all kidding aside, that's very scary. It's very scary. And what other decisions get made about medications that are distributed that might be in shortage or that, it just screams to me of George Orwell's 1984. You know, who makes those decisions and how are they implemented or Soylent Green? Remember all those books we had back in the 60s about masterminds who take over the world and make these large decisions on who should live and who should die. That's really kind of scary. And I think now is the time, right? Now is the time to decide ways to defend against that or to at least put in place protocols that prevent people with bad intentions of being in control of these things.
Well, I took a class in artificial intelligence last semester, and they showed us a video of a drone that's smaller than the palm of your hand. It exists today, and it's equipped with facial recognition. And the moderator was on a stage, and there was a mannequin next to him, and the drone went up and flew to the mannequin's forehead and slammed into it, which would instantly kill a human because it pushes your brain back through the back of your head. And he said, this technology is here today. This is not the future.
Yeah, I'm always surprised rather at some of the technologies that's out there. You know, I've seen satellite pictures from outer space where they can read your license plate number. The technology is just improving and at such a rate. And you know, when I was in college, I remember I did a paper on the difference between knowledge and intelligence. And I'll never forget this. We were asked to contrast and compare knowledge and intelligence. And knowledge, it seemed to me, was the ability to gather information and consolidate it, where intelligence was the capacity to use that information productively. And whereas knowledge can increase geometrically, intelligence does not, right? Intelligence is something that evolves. And so your intelligence increases much slower, at a much slower rate than your ability to gather information and gather knowledge. And so that's really the question for me. Do you have the intelligence to use the knowledge that you gain?
I love the distinction, me being a word person. I like that. And that's, I guess, that's why they don't call it artificial wisdom.
Right, artificial wisdom, right.
Because there is a robot, Sophia. I don't know if you've heard of her. I learned about her last semester, and she's, they call her a robot citizen because she's a citizen of Dubai, I believe it is. And she looks completely human. She's also like a mannequin, except for she blinks and she smiles and she speaks and she has conversations. So she interacts with the users, and there's many chances to see her on, you know, the internet with people who have interviewed her. They all seem to be disconcerted, but the back part of her head is open to show the mechanics of the computers that are inside of her. And she just made news earlier this year because she's starting to walk. They've outfitted her with being able to take steps because before she was being moved by like a joystick or something. It's very, very weird. And I can only imagine that she's getting more and more sophisticated because she learns through every encounter, every conversation that she has, she gains and takes, has a takeaway from it. You can watch the progress too over time with how, when she first started out to now present day. It's, and I keep thinking to myself, the only reason that I've heard of artificial intelligence being valuable is IBM created a computer called Watson. And they sent Watson to medical school, and Watson reads every study that's ever published. So Watson has more knowledge than, or information than any one person on the planet. And when it comes to diagnosing, Watson is correct about 97% of the time, because the human being isn't part of the equation, just the science is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time I've heard that it's of value and of benefit. Otherwise, I think we're just, well, I know it sounds like I'm an old fart, but I just think that if we delegate too much to machines, then where's the human condition and the human experience and compassion and empathy and those things that we should have for one another? They don't have it. They're machines.
Right. That's absolutely true. And, you know, that I think there are miraculous things that can be done with this. But, yes, it all comes down to who controls the information, right, and how it's used.
Well, if you think about it, Michael, even hospitals have ethics committees,
right,
that meet together, and they're usually the brightest minds, and not even in the field of medicine, but maybe theologians or scholars or what have you, and they say what is and isn't correct for us to do for a human being, for survival, for rescuing, for reviving, for, you know, all those decisions that somebody has to make in a split second. But they have a governing board that dictates how they turn and in what direction and why. And that's what we don't have with the internet.
And you know what? That stuff can be morphed so easily into bad things. You know, I was having a discussion. It's strange that this just occurred to me, but I was having a discussion with a friend of mine today about Volkswagen, you know, which was a car that was really developed by the Nazis, was the people's car from Hitler, and how great the Germans were at engineering, and how when the society turned towards the, let's call it, the dark side of fascism, how they used that engineering ability to exterminate people. They were just as efficient at exterminating people, right, as they were at building things. Mm-hmm. And so it's really the way things are used, you know, if they're used for good purposes, then it's a great thing. And if they're not, then it can be a terrible thing. And I think that, unfortunately, when you talk about things like artificial intelligence, those things are opposite sides of the same coin.
Well, one of the things about ethics is anybody could get on the internet. There's no threshold.
Right.
Which, what else do we have in life that you have that free license
right.
for?
Right.
I mean, to go to school, to get your driver license, to we all have laws and rules that
right.
we agree to obey, and then we have ramifications if we don't. So one of my final projects last semester was, I said that we should have a digital literacy requirement, that in order to log in for the first time, you take a course that tells you what is and isn't appropriate, which would hopefully reduce the trolls and the bullies and all of those scams and pranks and et cetera that are perpetrated on people. Can you believe that Nigerian thing is still going around 20 years
later? You know what? I get things like this all the time, and I say to myself, is there anybody that really believes that there's some guy in the middle of Africa that's got $5 million and he wants to share it with you because he can't open a checking account?
Right.
You know, I mean, is there really anybody that believes that?
There must be, or else it wouldn't be alive.
Right.
And every time I get it, and I get them often, I'm like, I of course never even open it. It fortunately goes into my spam and I just X out of it. But I think it must work, or else it would not be here with us today.
Yep.
Again, taking advantage of people, you know, scamming, all of that phishing, scraping, it's terrible. And for some reason, we've kind of accepted it as the cost of doing business. Well, that's what you get when you get on the internet. You know, it happens. It's like, well, why don't we change that?
Well, you know what? This is a problem that my wife, Mrs. Brown, has all the time because she's a middle school librarian. And you know, half of what she does, I think, sometimes from the way she talks is to police children to you know, so that they learn how to use the internet appropriately and they don't get scammed and they don't get bullied and they don't think that anything that comes across the internet is truth. And you know,
and
I mean, and safe. Oh, yes. I mean, that's the scariest thing, isn't it? Especially for kids.
Yes.
You know, how many of them get lured into bad situations, you know, into, you know, they're lonely and they think they're going to find romance and what they find is some kind of pedophile or they, you know, they think they're the older people that are desperate to make ends meet and they think they're going to, you know, make money by loaning it to some guy on the internet and they only get abused and taken advantage of and lose their money. I mean, yeah, it's really dangerous territory out there. And I think you're right. I think this is an area that the government needs to get involved in. But it's also fraught with peril for them, right? Because we're Americans. We love our freedom. We love our independence. And you know, we have to tread lightly because what's the old adage? That there's an oxymoron that I'm from the government and I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But you know, it's interesting though, Michael, because the dark web exists too, and I don't ever want to be there. I've only heard of it. I've never investigated it.
Yeah.
But that's another part of the web that has been misused. And that's, again, that's another way for people to get taken advantage of and or exploited because even loneliness drives people to make decisions that they might not have made because they're craving affection and companionship and communication and stuff. So just for our listeners, the GDPR, which is what it refers to, stands for General Data Protection Regulation. And if you want to know more, their website is eugdpr.org. And that gives you overviews. It also gives you all the detail. You can get as much or as little information as you want to know. And to, you know, the EU is how big, Michael? How many countries? 20-something, right?
Yeah.
And
yes,
the fact that they could get their act together and produce a document and come to agreement and have it in black and white and in plain spoken language that everybody can understand, not legalese and stuff like that. I think that says a lot about their society.
It really does. And you know what? I have an old friend that says constantly, is a teacher, and says, those who want to teach must never cease to learn. So as always, Maria Sanchez, that epitomizes who you are, and I appreciate you teaching us a little more tonight.
Thank you.
You know, Maria is always out there trying to learn more and more and more, and she should be a shining example to everybody that's out there listening that learning is a lifetime endeavor. Well, we've got to go now. It's 7:55, but I want to leave you with tonight with a song from Michael Jackson. This goes out to Matt and Jacob Clark and all the young people out there that want to make a difference. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Thank you, Maria.
And make sure you vote on Tuesday if you haven't voted already.
Yes, absolutely.
Please show up to the polls.
Right, June 19th in D.C.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, because ours is Tuesday.
Voting. Yeah, early voting starts tomorrow for us, but the election's June 19th. But that's right, all over the place. In California and Maryland, for example, it's a few days after that. So this is voting time, folks. Whenever you vote locally, make sure you vote because it's important, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You have to think globally and act locally.
Yes. And thank you for your time. We know you have lots of choices. We appreciate your listeners.
Gonna make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.